The next speaker on the agenda is Sayyid Mohsen Jafri from the UK. Sayyid Mohsen has studied in the Hawza for some time, and in particular, he has studied recent Islamic movements like that of Imam Khomeini and Sheikh Zakzaki in Nigeria. His topic tonight is the Islamic Revolution and the role of the youth. Please welcome him to the podium with a loud salawat.
It's always difficult speaking on the topic of youth, simply because how do you define such a word? We belong to a line of thought. I remember there was a scholar who was shaheed in the tragedy that occurred a few years ago in Mina, and he said that we belong to a line of thought in which you can have a six-month-old baby and he's considered a youth, and you can have a 90-year-old companion and he's considered a youth. And following that, like, it shows that the more revolutionary you are, the more revolutionary your thinking is, the more youthful you are. I mean, I would dare anyone over here to claim that the likes of Imam Al-Asi or Imam Zafar Bangash or Sayyid Hassan Mujtaba are not youth. And you'll see what their reply is, for sure. This was slightly difficult for me, I have to admit. I couldn't figure out, like, what can you present? Because it is a very broad topic. And just like, inshallah, the leader of the Islamic Revolution becomes a guide in our lives and our day-to-day problems, I turn towards him for help in regards to this. And what I came back with was this speech that he had given. There were ministers who were complaining a lot about this problem we have with the youth. And in response to this, he gave a speech in which he said, "Do not say the problem of the youth. Say the youth are the resolution to problems." And then after that, he listed some places from before the revolution, during the revolution, and then afterwards, which showed where the youth became a resolution to the problems that they faced. So hopefully in this presentation we're going to go through some of those problems, and let's see, inshallah, we can benefit as much as possible from that. Please recite another salawat. Unfortunately, the duration that's been allotted to me won't allow me to go through every single point that he mentioned. However, I took the five which I thought were something that we could really learn from, and then I listed three others which are also important, but I just know we won't have the time to, unfortunately, go through them today. So as you can see, yourselves over there, like, those are the points. We're going to go through each of them now, inshallah. So the first point was the youth became the resolution to solve all the obstacles and problems you had in bringing about the revolution in the first place. They became the resolution for removing those problems. There were two specific things that are hinted towards. First is, it was the youth that did the legwork and they mobilized the masses, connecting them to the revolutionary scholars, so the divine symbols of the movement, and the revolutionary movement itself. One very good example, and there's a reason why I chose that specific image, is the book that you see over there. It's in Farsi, it's called Tarhe Kulliya and Andisha Islami Dar Quran. And the closest, not very good translation of that title that I could think of was the Islamic belief system from the Quran, but it's a lot deeper than that. That book is a compilation of speeches that Ayatollah Khamenei made 5 years before the revolution happened in the city of, in the holy city of Mashhad, when he was 35 years old. There's a lot to be said about that book. We usually spend 2 days just introducing that book, let alone going into what it actually is. But what happened was these lectures began at the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan, in the summer, at a time where usually in that part of the world people are asleep after Dhuhr Asr. When the lectures initially began, there were just a few people in front of Ayatollah Khamenei who were listening to them. But by the end of the month, there were so many people who began to attend these lectures that he had to stand halfway in the courtyard and use a speakerphone to give them. Why? Because the youth who had initially attended, they realized the power of these lectures that were being delivered, and they dedicated their activism to going around the city of Mashhad in any way that they could, whether it's hiring buses or carpooling or whatever, collecting other youth and bringing them to the center where Ayatollah Khamenei was giving these speeches. And those speeches are credited by the ones who attended them for being that which realigned the common people of the second largest city of the Islamic Republic to the correct definition of Islam, the only true definition of Islam, which is the revolutionary form. So you see like how the youth were helpful when it came to that. And again, that's a picture of Ayatollah Khamenei looking young. Again, I say that with not denying the fact that he is still very young. The second picture that you can see over there, that's the picture of a museum which some of you may have visited if you've been to Iran. It's called, now they call it Musée Ibrat. It was a prison which was in the center of Tehran, or close to the center of Tehran, and no one during the revolution knew what that structure was. No one knew that that was the prison where they were taking the revolutionaries and torturing them and killing them and then going missing and so on and so forth. Now it's been turned into a museum so we can go there and learn from the struggles and sacrifices that the people did make. Why did I put that picture there? The youth were responsible for carrying out activism in the most courageous ways, in the most dangerous of circumstances. They would do things in an environment where it was a pretty much known, like a common thing that would be known is that if there's four people standing together, one of them goes back to the intelligence and reports what's happening. There's a beautiful story here of an individual called Shaheed Ibrahim Hadi, which I'm hoping to speak about a bit closer to the end of this presentation. Just an example of that type of activism before the revolution took place. He had a very powerful voice, very young guy. He had a very powerful voice and he was known for his recitation, especially his adhan. One of his revolutionary acts that he used to carry out, so this is before the revolution has happened, there were a lot of places where the adhan was banned. If you say the adhan out loud, then you'll be arrested. Right? And in most other places, people were too afraid to recite it. Right? So where it wasn't legally banned, in other places, people were just too afraid to recite it. One of those places where it was banned was in somewhere where, like, basically the public gathered a lot in the different towns and villages, which is the bazaar, the market. What he would do is, regardless of where he was, as soon as it was time for salah, he would stop what he's doing, middle of the street, top of his voice, he would start reciting the adhan. As soon as he would finish the adhan, he would run away. And then the police would come running after looking for, okay, who was that, right? And I said this to my friends as well, when we're talking about the police, I'm not talking about the police we have in Britain who don't even have guns, right? I'm talking about the secret police of the Shah who are responsible for the torture and kidnapping, disappearance, and the killing of so many of our revolutionary figures. So before the revolution happened, the youth were involved with trying to bring about the revolution, create that atmosphere so the people could be ready. During the revolution, the youth were at the forefront of leading the demonstrations. Right? The 10 days of victory, as they're known as, when from the time that the Shah had left to the time that the that an Ottoman came and victory was announced. There were demonstrations taking place which were being dealt with in, you know, obviously the most harshest ways. Like, there were a lot of shuhada, there were a lot of people wounded, right? Who would be at the forefront of organizing them? Who would be at the forefront of being there? It would be the youth, right? So our family stresses that. Another thing that the youth became, you know, a resolution for us was making sure that those demonstrations happen in the most difficult of circumstances. And then when the Imam eventually came back, those same youth ended up becoming responsible for his security, and they stayed with him all the way through. But again, this is the youth. So this was during the revolution. A very big issue that the Islamic Republic had after the revolution were the different counter-revolutionary forces which existed within Iran. So there were two main ones. One were the separatist groups, especially active in the Kurdish areas, and the other were communist groups. So obviously with the bringing, with the revolution coming through, and Imam Khomeini saying, you know, no East, no West, the rejection of both the Eastern and Western blocs, both blocs ended up funding these groups to try and tame down Iran from the inside. Again, our Khamenei stresses, it was the youth that were at the forefront of challenging them, identifying them from within society, fighting them, changing their hearts and minds. It was the youth who were at the forefront of doing that. This is something which is very close to my heart for different reasons, but fortunately we don't have the time to go into why that is. But when a revolution comes about, and it is in the pursuit of establishing Tawheed, the slogan of Tawheed, this is an explanation that Al-Fanai himself gives, not in this lecture, but in actually the book that we showed before. The slogan of Tawheed is La ilaha illallah, the rejection of the non-divine and this pursuit towards Allah. Ayatul Khana has a beautiful saying. He says that means wherever Tawheed goes, two immediate effects happen. The mustakbirin, the arrogant, begin to shake, they get worried, and the mustadafin, the oppressed, the downtrodden, for them it becomes a magnet of hope, it becomes a magnet of strength, right? They get attracted to it. He actually goes further than that, and he says, Ayatullah Khamenei says, your existence as a muwahid, right? You can say you believe in Tawheed, right? But if you are genuinely a muwahid, someone who believes in Tawheed, then your presence will have the exact same effect. Your presence will shake the arrogant powers, and your presence will become a magnet for the downtrodden and the oppressed. Please just say Salawat. So a very big part of the revolution was not just shaking the infrastructures and those big idols of the non-divine elements, but it was also looking out for the mustad'afin of the society. And again, the youth, through what they had been taught is Tawheed, through what they had been taught is revolutionary Islam. The youth were at the forefront of not just challenging the Tawhut and causing problems there, but they were also at the forefront of carrying out projects completely voluntarily with the little resources they had that would help the poor and downtrodden of the society that had suffered for so many years when the Shah was there. And I come to this, and I wish I could literally, for each of those individuals that you see every day, there are books written and you can spend hours discussing each and every one. I'm going to somehow manage to condense it into half a minute each for the individuals that you see over here. One of the things that Ayatollah Khamenei regularly highlights, especially when it comes to the important role the youth played in the revolution, is the role that they played during the Holy Defense. I just want to, for those of you who don't know, again, there's so much that could be said in just the introduction of the Holy Defense, but the 8-year war for a lot of us, we think that okay, it was a war between Iran and Iraq. So I just made a point on the side there. Firstly, it wasn't Iran, the country. It wasn't Iraq, the country. It was a war between the Islamic Republic, the Islamic Revolution, the Islamic Resistance, and the Ba'athi regime, who, as you can see in brackets, I don't know if you read it or not, it included 24 other nations that materially supported the regime, including both the superpowers. So it wasn't just a simple Iran fighting Iraq thing. And I think it's very important for us to remember that. Who were some of the youth? As you can see over here, the first one, Shahid Ibrahim Himmler. He was the commander of the 27th Rasulullah Brigade. Battalion, sorry. Which was the battalion which used to be at the forefront of most of the major operations. And he was also, for a very short time, he was the second in charge of all of the intelligence during the war. How old was he when he became Shahid? 28. What kind of an individual was he? I'm just going to mention one thing from him. In front of him, he saw a person becoming Shaheed. Like they brought a Shaheed in front of him, and he asked, how did he pass away? And they said there was a sniper and he shot him through the head. And he looked at him and he said, I don't want to just be Shaheed like this. I want every single piece of me to bear witness to Allah. That's my Shahada. He was in battle. There was bombardment, artillery bombardment in his area. And one second they saw him there, the other second they didn't. Nothing remained of him. Every single bit of him gave Shahada. This 28-year-old thinking in such a manner. The next individual, Hassan Shahid Hassan Bakr. What he's most famously known for is the recapture of Khurramshahr. Just the story of Khurramshahr highlights the impressiveness of the youth that were alive at that time. So I had actually decided initially that we're going to go through this and then we're going to spend a portion of the time just looking at the significance of the Battle of Khurramshahr. How it was lost is significant. It was the only major city which the Ba'athis ended up capturing. And more importantly, how it was recaptured. Because when they came to recapture it, when the Islamic Republic's army came to recapture it, the Iraqis knew, the Ba'athis knew that if we lose this city, that's it. Like, you know, this, we have to make our last stand. Okay, now when an army like that, who has far more numbers than you, who has far superior weapons than you, has far superior everything to you, decides we're not going to attack, we're going to bunker down, right? And we're going to let them come. Imagine how many sacrifices you have to make to get that city down. Imagine the strategies that you need to put into place to actually win that battle. Imagine the responsibility that you would have. The person in charge for the strategy of the whole of that recapture of Khurramshahr was Shahid Hassan Bakr. He was Shaheed when he was 26. How old was he when he was in charge of that operation? 23. This is who the youth of the revolution were. This is the potential that each and every one of us has. The next person, Shaheed Hussain Khalrazi. Again, he was one of the highest ranking shuhada during the Iran-Iraq War, and he was 29 when he became Shaheed. What was he famous for? In the fourth or fifth operation that he was in charge, he became wounded. And he became wounded in a way that they had to cut off one of his arms, I can't remember which one it was. They had to cut off one of his arms. As soon as they cut it off and he had a bit of rest and it healed a bit, that should be the end of the war for anyone. Like, that was naturally like the end of the war for anyone else. Like, you lose a limb, that's it, like, you go back. He refused to go back. He went back on the war front, he went back on the battlefield and led five other operations after this. He's 29 years old when he became Shaheed. Then you have Shaheed Gurjari, known as the Lion of Kurdistan. They say that, like, his fighting ability is one thing, They say that his personality was such that he was able to change the hearts and minds of the people of Kurdistan to the extent that they didn't want to be a part of the separatist movement because of the akhlaq of this individual. Right? Again, when he became Shaheed, he was 27. These are heavyweights, but I actually thought, okay, again, I need to find some shuhada who are young, and I didn't even look at these guys because I know their stories. I didn't realize that these heavyweights were that young. But then when I did my research and I realized that the likes of Shaheed Gujardi, again, I wish we could expand on who he was. Shaheed Mahdi Zainuddin, 25, major general at the age of 25 when he became Shaheed. What is he known for? He was known for finding solutions to obstacles in battles when everything else was like, everyone else had given up. Do you know what his secret was? His secret was when they looked at all the maps and they just couldn't figure out a way around this, he would wait for all the soldiers to go to sleep, and in one operation, he takes the boots off his foot soldiers and he cleans them while they're sleeping. In another operation, he goes to the kitchen and he starts cleaning those big dishes, Major General. He starts cleaning the big dishes. Why? Because it's a promise of Allah, if you look after your iman and if your actions are good, you will be guided. Right? Surah Yunus, verse number 9, as a reference. Right? It's a promise of Allah. So these people, at that age of 25, he reckoned, he gave so much importance to self-development. So much important to that iman and those amal salih, that's what he would do. Like, just see the maturity in that thinking, that the importance he gave to, again, self-discipline and self-purification. Again, I wish I could expand more on each and every one of them. The last one, Sayyid al-Hudar, right? He wasn't ranked, and the reason why he wasn't ranked is because at that time there was no formal Islamic army. What was he most famous for? When the Baathis entered, Bani Sadr, the traitor president of Iran at that time, he gave the order for the Iranian army to pull back all the way to Isfahan, the outskirts of Isfahan. And that's where the defense was supposed to start. The people of all these cities and towns and villages all along the way, they were like, hang on a second, you know, what about us? We will be finished if they come towards us. Like, who's going to save us? Some youth got together and they took the responsibility of spreading themselves in these different towns and villages and defending. Like, they said, even if we slow them down only to the extent that they have to go over our bodies, we'll do that. Shaykh Ibn al-Huda was one of these personalities. He went to the town of Hawazin, right? With 110 people, including, age-wise old and age-wise young, right? But they were all youth, remember. 110 people. Hawazin had no strategic importance whatsoever. The plan of the Baathi army was just to go past it. They were supposed to go past it and, carry on their attack. And as Saddam Hussein very famously said to a question a reporter asked, like, I'll answer you tomorrow or a few days after in Tehran, where he would have a press conference over there. Hawazin was so insignificant, like, they were just expecting the army just to go through. These 110 people did not let two mechanized divisions and one infantry division go through Hawazin. First attack, they repelled it. Second attack, they repelled it. Third attack, they repelled it. And then the order came, like, this is not even an important town. Just go around it. Right. So they literally, the army was like, okay, we're not going to touch this place, we're going to go around it. When Saddam Hussein found out how many losses they had incurred in this insignificant, like, strategically insignificant place, he took personal responsibility to carry out the operation to take away. And they did. And he did. I mean, the revenge he took on Hawazin was such that once the battle was won, his revenge was he wiped that village from the face of the earth. No building was left standing. Even now, when you go to Hoesir, the place where the town actually used to be, like the village actually used to be, nothing is there but the graveyard where Shahid Ahmad al-Hudar and his companions are buried, and a place where like you can go and rest, like those who come in for ziyarah of the Shahada, they can rest there. And they made like a new village, like slightly maybe 20-minute walk to the site. That was his revenge. Shahid Ahmad al-Hudar stood there. I'm going to mention something very quickly about Shahid Ahmad al-Hudar. So I was fortunate enough to be in Hoesir on Shabi Ashur on one of the days. And randomly I woke up and I just had this restlessness inside of me. You know, you're so close on Shabi Ashur to the likes of Shahid Ahmad al-Hudar and like his companions, and the way they made the little graveyard is so beautiful. For those who've been like know what I'm talking about. It just has a different feeling. I was walking around and I realized on the wall they had found the diary of Shahid Ahmad al-Hudar, and they had put excerpts from his diary like just on the wall so you can read it. And I stopped at one, and the way he spoke in that, he said, I have just woken up for Salatul Layl and I went to do wudu. When I returned from my wudu, I heard something. He said, listen closely. You can hear the streets of Banu Hashim waking up. You can hear the wudu of Abu Dhabi. You can hear the Quran of Hassan and Hussein. You can hear the Salat. It's like, and he was 22 when he became Shaheed. A person who has that intensity of love with the Ahlul. A person who, you know, in the midst of the battle, like, okay, worry about conserving your energy for, you know, to fight. You're getting up for Salatul Layl and this is the experience that you're having as a result. Imagine what level he was. Please recite Salawat. I always say one of the benefits of not looking at when you started the talk is you don't know when you're supposed to finish. So, if someone can give me a hint towards how long it's been and how long we have left, I would be very grateful. Okay. I will finish very quickly on this last individual. Ibrahim Ali. As the brothers who've been with me in the last couple of days know that when you speak about this person for an hour, you need to rush it. That's how many virtues he has. Again, the time is finished. Like, I don't want to go into too much details, but just to give you an idea, this was a normal foot soldier. He wasn't a general, he wasn't a commander, just a normal foot soldier. When I say just a normal foot soldier in the Islamic army, it's like saying Shahid Muhsin Hujaji was just another foot soldier. Right? So even they have their ranks. Who was this individual? The person who compiled the book. Why did he compile it? He had a dream. In that dream, he saw someone by the name of Sheikh Zahid Hussain. Sheikh Zahid Hussain was known to be one of the teachers of some of the people who were most famous for giving Dars al-Akhlaq. Those who had attained levels of spirituality, Sheikh Zahid Hussain was their teacher. He said, I saw him giving a talk in this dream. And he said to his students in front of him, why do you come to me for advice on practical irfan, on practical mysticism? When I myself have a teacher, and he was holding a picture, and the person who compiled the book, he looked at the picture, and that picture was a picture of Shahid Ibrahim Hadi. He wakes up, he's like, I know Ibrahim Hadi, but do I really know him? And he went on this journey to find out stories about who this individual was, fed enough, compiled the book. There's one story within, again, to show like what level that this individual had reached. There's one story, there's a person by the name of Alain Dulabi, very famous for those of you who are aware of personalities like him. Alain Dulabi was, maybe someone you've heard of is Rajab Ali Khayat. Rajab Ali Khayat was a normal individual who had attained very high levels of spirituality, and people would come to him for spiritual advice, including some pretty heavyweight scholars. Alain Dulabi was someone similar like that. He was one of those hidden gems during his life who had attained very high levels of spirituality, and again, heavyweight scholars would go to him and ask for advice. There's a story in the book which shows that one day Brian Hardy was in the house, and there was a friend who was with him. He said, "Come with me, I need to go somewhere." So they went and they met. He went to the residence of Aurelius. There were other people over there. Again, like scholars, normal people, like asking him for advice, and talking about spirituality. When they left, Awedul Abid turned towards Ibrahim Hadi with full attention and said to Ibrahim Hadi, sat in front of him like a student sits in front of the teacher, and said to him, "Awe Ibrahim, can you give me some advice?" At hearing this, Ibrahim, completely shocked, and stands as, you know, like in Farsi, saying, "Jihad first. Like, you know, what are you saying? Like, who am I to give you advice?" And he became so disturbed at this, he asked for permission to leave. He gets up and he walks out. His friend, who, like most people at that time, didn't know who Awedul Abid was, when they leave, he says to Ibrahim Hadi, "What's wrong with you? Some old guy is asking you for advice, just give him advice." And Ibrahim Hadi says, "If you knew who that was, you would not say what you're saying right now." And his friend is the one who narrates the story, and he says after Awedul Abid passed away, the story started coming out about his spiritual status, and I realized what he had said that day was not a small statement. And no wonder Ibrahim was so shaken. Talking about youth, he had attained all of this. Another, I have to mention this. There's a very famous clip in which Ayatollah Khamenei is speaking about this book, but the Farsi version. Okay. And he says on that clip that, "I read this book recently about Ibrahim Hadi, and this, he has such a magnetic character, this pull. After I finished the book, I couldn't get myself to place this book back in the bookshelf among the other books. So it stayed with me by the side." Who is this personality that 40 years after his shahada, you have the leader of the Islamic Revolution speaking about him in such a way? Who is this personality that we, being in a foreign land, in a foreign culture, in a foreign language, halfway across the world, 40 years after his shahada, have the tawfiq to be speaking about? I wish I could mention more stories, but inshallah, if I'm not mistaken, the brothers and sisters, the book is available. At the back, please do find out more about this individual. How old was this individual? Talking about youth, and you know, I already mentioned like what his spiritual status was, and I've not mentioned all the other stories about him. He has so many stories about him that this is volume one. Okay, there's another volume after this. He was 26 years old when he became Shaykh. 26, and he dedicates it to him. I will end this presentation, I hope this was useful, with a request that we recite a Fatiha for all the Shuhada, for all the rightful scholars that have passed away, especially Imam Khomeini as we remember the revolution, for all the marhumin of this session. For all the marhumin who do not tell anyone, to recite a Fatiha for them after one loud salawat.